the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. Farm Bureau members can officially save the date for the California Farm Bureau annual meeting. The in-person event is happening on December 5th of this year in Orange County. You can check with your local Farm Bureau office for more details. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about the development of a statewide pesticide notification system and how it's moving forward. We'll also hear how the re-emergence and spread of branch broom rape is causing concern. And I'm starting off today's program with updates to the CFAP 2 program and how it's providing more funding to producers in need. Let's jump right in. Updates to the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program is allowing growers of livestock and specialty crops to receive assistance for losses during the pandemic. Scott Bennett, who's the American Farm Bureau Congressional Relations Director, says changes relate to how contract growers show their losses.
What this does is allows contract producers to now receive up to 80% of their revenue loss between 2020 and either 2019 or 2018. The 2018 calendar year can now be used in lieu of the 2019 calendar year to establish a revenue loss for payment through this program.
Bennett says this more accurately reflects the needs of those growers.
The American Farm Bureau has been instrumental working with the Department of Agriculture on this program. We have up to $1 billion available for contract growers that have seen a revenue loss in 2020.
The deadline to apply for those funds is October 12th. You can contact your local FSA office for more information. Right now, let's take a listen to these back-to-back agriculture reports with AgNet West, Brian German.
DPR is in the process of developing a statewide pesticide application notification system. President and CEO of the Western Agricultural Processors Association, Roger Isom, explained ag's role in the process and how it's being done.
There are four working groups to develop this system. The one that I'm involved in and some of our members are involved in and other ag groups are involved in is just that. It's the farming and their representatives focus group. And, you know, they're asking for input. What could the system consist of? What should it look like? When should it kick in? Is it all chemicals? Is it just restricted use chemicals? Should it apply to any type of application, if it's ground rig or is it only aerial applications? You know, when should it kick in? Should it be if I'm a half a mile away or anywhere in the state? So, you know, a couple of counties, Monterey, Kern, have implemented some systems or some type of notification system. The initial one in Monterey was an email system where people signed up. And more than 50% of the people that signed up weren't even in the state of California. So we're not going to accept that. What we're fearful of is activists showing up at a pesticide application, in particular fumigations. That's exactly what happened in Monterey County, where they showed up prior to the fumigation, tried to disrupt it. And so we're saying, no, that's not going to happen. We completely understand that your neighbors, people that could be impacted by an exposure to an accidental release or a drift, should know, hey, we're going to be applying 1,3-D at this field tomorrow. But again, limit to those that could be exposed. We don't need people in New York being notified of a pesticide application in Western Fresno County. It doesn't make sense. The only purpose there is to disrupt what we're doing. And quite honestly, the Department of Pesticide Regulation in California and the county ag commissioners, we have the most robust pesticide system in the world. Nobody in this country has a pesticide use reporting system like California does. Nobody in this country has a approval system, especially for restricted use materials like California does. We do it the safest as anywhere in the world, and I can guarantee you that, and any county ag commissioner can tell you that, even the Department of Pesticide Regulation can tell you that. You know, they're trying to find a problem where one doesn't exist. And so, you know, we're pushing back on it, to be frank. We're not going to accept notifying everybody. If there's, you know, neighbors that need to be notified that aren't already being notified. I mean, that's the thing for us is we think the label requirements already and the existing regulations take care of this. So they're going to have to show us, where's the incident data? Show us where there's a problem. We're not doing this just to do it for, you know, because someone asked for it. It needs to be shown that there's a need for this. And so we're just not going to take this sitting down. If there's a need and you can show us a need, then we're going to discuss it. But just to do it for regulation's sake, no, we're not going to do that.
While the issue is still relatively small, the reemergence and spread of branched broom rape is causing some concern for producers, particularly those in the tomato industry. Cooperative Extension weed science specialist at UC Davis, Brad Hansen, described how the problem is affecting California growers and why it's such a difficult weed to deal with.
This is a weed that has been reported on and off in California for 40 or 50 years. Since about 2017 or so, there's been an increasing number of reports in the processing tomato fields in the Sacramento Valley, primarily in Yolo County, but also in a couple of surrounding counties. So branched broom rape is an interesting weed problem in that it's an obligate parasite. So that means it can only germinate when there's a suitable host present. And this particular parasite is a root parasite. So the broom rape seeds germinate and the initial root has to encounter another host root, and it attaches and obtains all of its nutrients from that host. And this is an interesting one to me because most of the life cycle of the broom rape plant occurs below the ground, and it only has an above ground portion for really a few weeks as it sends up a flowering stalk, flowers, and sets seed really quickly. And that makes it a real challenge to detect and also to manage.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. It is time for us to head out for our first break of the show, but we'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report from Randall Wiseman when we return. I do want to quickly remind you that you can access any of the reports mentioned in today's show or previous shows just by heading on over to our website. That's www.agnetwest.com for more information. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The U.S. Homeland Security Department announced the continued closure of the U.S.-Canada border through September 21st, citing COVID-19 concerns. The closure includes restrictions on non-essential travel and land at ferry crossings with Canada and Mexico, but ensures the flow of essential trade and travel. Meanwhile, Canada opened the border earlier this month to non-essential travelers from the United States. U.S. Representative Brian Higgins, a Democrat from New York, serves as a co-chair of both the Northern Border Caucus and the Canada-U.S. Interparliamentary Group. Higgins states, quote, "There has not been enough attention placed on the value and opportunity that comes with restoring connections between our two nations," unquote. Travel restrictions at land ports of entry between the United States and Canada were first implemented in March 2020. Higgins adds the extension, quote, "is beyond disappointing. It is hurtful both at a human and economic level," unquote. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You are listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, sustainability is of growing importance to international customers, and that includes the U.S. red meat industry. U.S. Meat Export Federation's Joe Sheely has more details.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, Director of Export Services Cheyenne McIndeffer explains that sustainability is of growing importance to international audiences, and she says the U.S. meat industry has a great story to tell.
We really see this as an opportunity to get ahead of the game and start talking about the really good things that we are doing throughout the meat and livestock supply chain on the sustainability front. And this is really pertinent now because not only do we have customers in different countries asking, what are U.S. cattle, what are U.S. pork producers doing? But also because we have a lot of international interest for events like the Food Systems Summit in September. The Paris Climate Accord, obviously, will see countries looking at how to reduce their emissions, and we want to make sure that ag isn't unfairly impacted. There are a lot of things that agriculture gets blamed on, and we really see this as an opportunity to highlight exceptional things that we've been doing in this space in the U.S., and because our highly productive systems make us sustainable in many areas. We are already the most sustainable beef industry in the world based on emissions. We produce more pounds of beef with less total beef cattle because of our grain finishing model. So we have superior cattle genetics, and it makes those cattle very efficient. All of that saves resources. And our grain finishing also allows us to get those animals to slaughter age in 18 to 20 months versus a grass finished model, which could take 2 to 4 years. Our pork industry, it's really all about continuous improvement. And again, having very healthy, highly efficient animals allows us to produce more pounds of pork while utilizing less resources. Feed grains are obviously critically important for this industry. We're blessed here in the U.S. because it's really the best place in the world to grow soybeans, corn, and other row crops. Right next door to hog farms that are getting their feedstuffs from across the road or even on the same farm. So obviously that has huge emissions benefits.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And steakhouses across the country are struggling to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic as the Delta variant of the virus expands and beef prices are moving higher. Top steakhouses that provide a dining experience and high price cuts of beef see the Delta variant as a possible threat to travelers and group events. Now, several chains say they are better prepared amid the pandemic this year since adding outdoor dining and home delivery should the latest surge or new government restrictions scare diners away again. At least that's according to Reuters. But sales of high-end chains peaked last month before falling slightly to start off this month. Meanwhile, government data is showing wholesale beef prices are up 40% from this time last year. But industry consultant Martin Knapp said the potential of booster shots of the COVID-19 vaccine could help as soon as next month. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. USDA's honeybee and pollinator research coordinator, Elizabeth Hill, explains the concept of data dashboards, as well as how one that's been developed specifically for pollinators can aid researchers and stakeholders in pollinator health efforts.
A dashboard essentially is a way to easily visualize data. It's a data visualization tool. And the beauty of dashboards is that if you put the effort into specifying what type of data you have or what type of study you're dealing with, for example, you can actually put filters, create fields for each of these entries so that a user can filter down quite quickly to the exact topics that they are looking for. So dashboards are used for a lot of different reasons, but in the data world, first and foremost, this is going to help a user quickly hone in on not only the data sets that are available, but also what data they need and make it accessible and easily downloaded. So for us, that's key, especially for our internal ARS researchers, for example. We want to make sure that they are able to share information with one another and also be aware of what others are seeing.
Again, that was USDA's honeybee and pollinator research coordinator, Elizabeth Hill. You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Neal. We'll be right back. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
WildEye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask WildEye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on WildEye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall chats with Arizona hay farmer Trevor Bales about Washington discussing raising estate taxes and how that might impact family farms across America. Let's take a listen to their conversation.
Yeah, so, one of the things we're facing up here in Washington, D.C. now is talking about raising taxes. And one of those taxes they think about raising is doing away with our stepped-up basis, which if the people that listen to us don't understand that, when land is passed from one generation to the next, they can take a stepped-up basis in the value and not have to pay inheritance tax on that or capital gains taxes on that. So they're talking about doing away with that and making capital gains paid at death. And that is that's going to be a tremendous burden on small family farms. So I don't know what your knowledge level in there, but how do you feel about that in passing farm on to the next generation?
I'm fortunate that I'm really not too knowledgeable on it. However, my dad is currently, like right now, going through all the estate stuff with his parents while they're still in great – their mental health is still there. And so – a lot of people, and I've read several articles about people waiting too long because it's not a fun conversation. Like, hey, when you guys die, let's talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about when they're dead. So it's been a touchy subject. One, family farms are always touchy subjects. But two, they're talking about, as my grandparents, when they start ailing and when they pass. So luckily my dad is really, he's like, look, let's not wait too long. So he is dealing with that right now. I don't know. I haven't kept up with it. But without having to know much about it, if a young farmer that already has a lot of debt and equipment now inherits a farm that comes with a hefty price tag because the government says that you inherited this and now you have to pay us a tax on what the value is, man, I mean, you don't have to know a whole lot about the subject, but I mean, I don't think I know anything.
Yeah, he wouldn't make it. He wouldn't be able to survive.
Very few farmers are operating without debt. I don't know if I know anything.
We actually have done some videos of actual situations, and one of them back before they increased the exemption of inheritance tax, there's a lady in North Carolina said that at age 14 she had to take out all of her college fund mm-hmm. money their parents had put back, all the money she'd set back, from birthdays and Christmases and everything else, just to pay some of the inheritance tax. And I think she ended up still selling part of the farm to be able to keep the farm
terrible.
Existing and staying in the family.
That's terrible.
So,
no.
And, the thing that people really don't realize, Trevor, is it's not just agriculture. It's all small mm-hmm. businesses across America, and that stepped-up basis is so important, and we need people to understand it because the general public that's not connected to agriculture, they love small family mm-hmm. farms. They love a farm like yours where you and your dad and your uncle work together, mm-hmm. cousin. And, that's what they have this great draw to what you do in that type of family structure. And the more burden they put on us with taxes or regulation, the less chance a small farmer can survive.
It is frustrating. You think about how many times we've paid taxes on something, property tax in Arizona, the equipment we've purchased, the employment tax that we have, the power that we run, all the parts that we buy, the fuel that we buy, everything we buy, and everyone we employ, there is a tax on it. So, and now they throw one more on. It's very frustrating. Very frustrating. I mean, you're just being double taxed on things, and it's not helping any small business at all, really, or any. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really concerns me because the average age of the farmer is, 60 plus.
Ooh.
And we need young people to come to agriculture, and we surely don't need to make it impossible
for
farmers to pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah. You know, so. Not making it any easier.
Hey, if we left anything out you'd like to touch on, Mr. Bales?
I can't think of anything. We didn't talk about YouTube, so I do a lot of YouTube stuff as well. And that's just, I don't know, I just kind of started that to show people how we make hay in Arizona pretty much. It's kind of boring. I don't know. We just make hay. Then all the little projects I have in between. So I don't want to tell people it's the coolest YouTube you've ever seen. It's just a hay farmer's YouTube. So if you want to see the process, I go through it. Unfortunately, we're low on employees. So I myself am stuck in the same piece of equipment all day, every day. And so when I get a chance to jump out and watch them bale, I do. Or a chance to go watch them rake or cut some hay, I will. Yes, two or three days ago. It's been Monday. That was yesterday already. Wow. Man, every day feels longer or further away. Anyways, we had a demoed a. We run a Heston swather mower, and we demoed a New Holland mower. So I had them race. I put two cameras on them, and they're kind of pointed at each other. So we were racing.
I actually saw that last night getting ready.
Yeah, so that should be up next week or the week after. But I try to make it fun. I'm hoping next year I'll be able to get. I'll have some more employees. Making some structure, some changes the way we're going to do things. And so I'm hoping to have more guys and I can see more things. But like I said, it's not really – so some people, you might be, man, this YouTube is pretty boring. But if you want to see, how we make hay in Arizona, you can watch and you kind of get an idea. But, so I do the Instagram and the YouTube stuff.
Well, Trevor, it must not be too boring because my son-in-law, Jared Terry – follows you.
Is he a farmer as well, or what's he do?
No, he works for the federal government with the Army.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
And he's kind of a numbers guy. He's a guy, you know, so good guy. But he follows you. He recognized you as soon as I visited your farm. So
stuff like that still blows my mind that somebody recognized me somewhere. I don't know. It's still very surreal, I guess. Or wow.
Hey, I'll tell you the story. I came to Arizona back when I was running for this position, because I had to, every 2 years I asked the membership to vote and put me back in this position as president. And I went to Arizona to talk to them about voting for me. And I walked into this reception, there's probably 200-300 people there, all different ages and everything. And I saw this guy on the other end. He's a little short guy, and he had his cowboy hat on. He ducked down, he saw me, and he come running across the room. He snatched his hat off right in front of me, and he said, "Zippy Duval, will you sign my hat?" And I said, "Why?" I said, "How do you even know me?" He says, "I see you on RFD TV every week."
Isn't that funny how things like that can happen? It just kind of catches you. Like, why do you want? Like, I'm not cool or special or anything. Man, I'd like to go to bed before around 8 p.m. every night. Like, I don't do anything cool. Like, I just bale hay all the time. I actually run a hay squeeze, which. Yeah, that's a whole other thing nobody's ever heard of is a hay squeeze. Google that. That'll blow your mind. But, I'm not that cool. I'm just on my phone and my GoPro a lot more than the average person. So
so if anybody wants to look at some of your stuff in your store online, what do they
got? So the website is baleshay, BALESHAY.com. Not to be mistaken with Bale Shay, because my mom said Bale's Hay's not Bale Shay. Anyways, baleshay.com. And the YouTube is Bale's Hay Farm and Ranch. Because I thought it'd be better to get back to the roots, but instead we just made a really long name for ourselves. Bales Hay would be much shorter. And then the Instagram is Bales Hay as well.
To listen to the full conversation, visit fb.org. It is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of today's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Agriculture officials found the first giant hornet nest of 2021 last week in Washington State. The nest, located near Blaine, Washington, is about a quarter mile away from the first reported giant hornet spotting this year on August 11th. A Washington State tracking team, along with the Oregon Department of Agriculture and USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, located the nest. WSDA netted, tagged with a tracker, and released three hornets. One hornet slipped out of the tracking device, another hornet was never located, and one eventually led the team to the nest. Entomologists will now develop their plans to eradicate the nest, happening this week. Asian giant hornets, also known as murder hornets, are not native to the United States. They are the world's largest hornet and prey on honeybees and other insects. This is the first known nest found this year, and agriculture officials in the Pacific Northwest believe more are undiscovered. DeHaan also notes concerns that fuel demand may shrink as more companies table return-to-work plans and the summer driving season comes to a close. And he expects the national average gas price to fall below $3 per gallon within the next few weeks. While COVID cases may eventually slow, OPEC has continued its plan to ramp up oil production every month until 2022, leaving oil under heavy selling pressure. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Brian German with more local news.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is looking for guidance on how school meal programs are administered. USDA's Food and Nutrition Service has opened public comment on the Buy American provision within the National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program. In order to claim federal reimbursement for meals served, school food authorities have to follow federal procurement and program regulations, which include the Buy American provision. USDA is asking industry stakeholders for their opinion on how the Buy American provision is implemented and if there are any areas that might be improved upon. In recent years, ag groups such as the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives have raised concern about the amount of imported food that's served through the school meal programs. Exemptions are allowed if a certain product is not produced or manufactured domestically in sufficient quantities or quality. Exemptions are also allowed when competitive bids show that the cost of domestic products are significantly higher than imports. There's been a growing interest among ag groups and lawmakers that there's a lack of oversight when it comes to the exemption process. Written comments on the Buy American provision of school meal programs will be accepted through November 2nd at regulations.gov. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And rounding out today's show, Syngenta is investing in Ag Leaders of Tomorrow with its scholarship program. Syngenta offered up $15,000 in scholarships to six young women through its Accelerating a Generation Syngenta Scholarship Program. Numerous students applied for the 2021 scholarship, which is ran in partnership with Syngenta and the FFA organization. The students are studying everything from agronomy and crop science to environmental engineering and will attend universities all across the nation. In a statement, Pam Carraway, who's the communications lead for Syngenta, said that it's, quote, essential for students to feel supported in agriculture because it's vital for the industry to train the next generation of agriculture leaders. In addition to the scholarship, each student will choose a charity and a donation will be given on their behalf. For more information on scholarships, career opportunities for recent grad students, as well as internships and mentoring, visit www.syngenta.us.com.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at Agnet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German Agnet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal Agnet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.